'Tis the season to take stock of 2014, and that includes a sobering look at crime in Philadelphia. Toward that end, let's welcome Shira Goodman, Executive Director of Ceasefire PA, and Jim McMillan, Editor of GunCrisis.org. Shira and Jim, thanks for joining me on NewsWorks tonight.
It's great to be here.
Great, thanks.
Jim, let's start with an examination of Philadelphia's homicide count, and by some measures, the news is relatively good over the past several years.
It's a matter of context. There's good news and bad news and some hopeful news. This year, homicides have been running just a little bit above last year's rate in Philadelphia, but still quite a bit lower than the 2012 rate. Between 2012 and 2013, there was an historic decline in homicides in Philadelphia.
Do we know some of the factors that led to that drop?
There's sometimes sort of a gold rush for credit. Among things I hear about are data-informed policing. I'm impressed with some a wide spectrum of intervention models. In there are hospital-based intervention models, public health models, and innovations in the police department as well.
Specifically implemented in that interim?
One of them in particular, and the other one clearly having very, very briefly before, so clearly having impact in the same interim. Philadelphia Ceasefire is a public health intervention program based at the Temple University School of Medicine, and they've been working in the Philadelphia Police 22nd Police District in North Philadelphia. And between 2000 and other places, but in North Philadelphia, between 2011 and 2013, they report a reduction in shootings from 188 to 126, or nearly two-thirds, and a reduction in homicides from 47 to 26, or nearly 45%. Just last year alone, in 2013 in South Philadelphia, a more innovative police program called Focus Deterrence was in play, and they reported that shootings were down from 39 to 22, or nearly 45%. Homicides were down during the same period from 15 to 7, more than half.
Shira, I presume that the percentage of homicides due to guns is relatively stable, though, over years.
Right. It's usually about 80%, and almost 100% of those guns are illegally obtained or illegally used. They're people who either aren't old enough to have guns, they have a criminal record, something in their mental health history. So even though the numbers are getting better, we certainly have, you know, close to 250 families a year who are impacted, and the impact of those deaths goes far beyond the individual families to the communities. And obviously, you know, we also have to thank these great hospitals that we have here who are saving lives, but there are people who are surviving gunshots but having major impacts on the rest of their lives as well.
And that's exactly my next point. We're focusing specifically on homicides, but presumably a far greater number of individuals are wounded due to guns.
Well, that's right. And although violent crime in most, if not all, the categories has been falling steadily, we still do have, you know, a dangerous city where people's neighborhoods and families are being terrorized, where they live in fear. And although, again, our trauma centers are saving lives, there are people who there will be great economic impacts on them, the loss of work, the cost for first responders. I mean, it's still a really very serious problem that Philadelphia is facing.
Attorney General Kathleen Kane spoke about not going the extra mile to enforce apparently a law in place in the Corbett administration regarding guns.
So at the very end of this year's legislative session, the House and Senate took extra steps, including extra days, late night sessions, to pass the gun lobby's top priority, which was to give them special standing in court to sue towns and municipalities like Philadelphia who pass their own gun ordinances. When you or I want to sue Philadelphia for something, we actually have to be harmed by an ordinance. It has to impact us. We have to be fined or go to jail to have the right to sue. This law changes that entirely. Anybody who could own a gun in Pennsylvania or any organization of such people can now sue any town or municipality with any ordinance regulating guns. It's completely unprecedented in the nation and in Pennsylvania. That is not how you get into court. The ACLU wants to sue somebody. They can't just sue. They need a plaintiff with a name. Same thing for Planned Parenthood. But now if you living in Philadelphia don't like a gun ordinance out in the West, West Mifflin Township has one, for example, you could sue them. In 60 days, the beginning of January. And this is the other thing that's a little crazy, you can get your attorney's fees. And again, under the American system, if there's something that has attorney fee shifting, if you win, it's usually mutual. But here, if the plaintiff wins, if the gun owner or gun organization wins, they get their fees paid. If they lose, the township still has to pay its own fees. So a lot of these smaller towns are very worried. You know, they don't have a lot of money. And they feel they have to choose between the public safety and the public fisc.
Jim, we are coming up on the two-year anniversary of the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, and whether it's that or Aurora, Tucson, Virginia Tech, Columbine, it seems like it takes an event of that magnitude to at least think about reforming gun laws. Though back to Philadelphia, isn't it true that most crime is perpetrated by and the victims also are minority members?
So most of the gun violence here is intercultural. Mostly black men are dying. But perpetration doesn't begin or finish the story. There are so many factors involved in why gun violence emerges and the ways that we can intervene. So I mentioned these remarkable programs that played a role in the vast reductions of 2013, but focused deterrence, for example, is no longer funded. So intervention programs sometimes run up against budget shortfalls, administrative transitions, or other political impediments. So we've got to find a way to sustain them and to continue innovating and iterating to stop gun violence.
What are some of the big reasons why violent crime seems to be down, not just in Philadelphia, but in many major metropolitan areas?
I mean, I think we're seeing that nationally. I don't know if that's because of tougher penalties, if it's because of different police tactics, some of the focused deterrence work. I think efforts at really getting some of these quality of life crimes that then, you know, sometimes some neighborhoods believe, you know, that will help. The focused deterrence program that Jim spoke about was really focusing on where are the shootings coming from, who are the people doing that, and are there ways you can change and incentivize them to change their behavior. Again, that costs a lot of money, a lot of resources. But I think it's some of that innovative policing. I think it's some of it's cultural. I think tougher sentences hopefully are making a dent and people are seeing that it's not the calculus of whether or not to commit the crime versus doing the time might be different than it was.
I agree with most of what you said, except that it hasn't cost a whole lot. The Focus Deterrence Program was funded for 1 year for $150,000 in a city where the police budget's been up toward, you know, $500 million. So intervention is very cost effective. It's just been difficult to sustain and to scale.
Sure. Given the sustained power of the pro-gun lobby, what is realistic for your group to achieve in terms of changing gun laws?
Well, I think it takes a long time. I mean, and one thing we try to remind people all the time is that President Reagan got shot and took 12 years to pass the Brady Bill to expand background checks in this country. And so these things, they don't happen overnight. We are building a movement. We know that many more people in Pennsylvania and nationally are working on this issue, caring about this issue, letting people who want to represent them in Harrisburg and Washington know they care about it. We did hear several times this year from folks in Harrisburg on both sides of the aisle that our folks were out calling the other side. That's new. But people who care about gun violence prevention care about lots of things. They care about the economy. They care about health care. They care about education. And they're not necessarily single-issue voters, which I respect. I understand. The other side is much more focused, and I think it's going to take getting somebody out of office, putting somebody in office, and really showing that power at the ballot box.
Shira, a new administration comes in next month, and we understand that during Tom Corbett's time in office, a package of bills came from Philadelphia and didn't get as far as his desk. Any sense that a Wolf administration might look differently at the Philadelphia and its specific needs?
Well, I think even you know, certainly Harrisburg has never wanted to give Philadelphia its own authority to do very much with regards to guns or anything else, and I don't see Harrisburg changing that. But there was even just a mandatory minimum for carrying in Philadelphia that didn't get very far this year. I certainly think that Tom Wolf might be willing to sign more things than Tom Corbett was, but the legislature does not look more inclined to give Philadelphia its own rights or to let Philadelphia have the power to solve its own problems. I think, though, you know, certainly this lawsuit that we talked about against this Act 192, it affects all the cities and municipalities. I was in Jenkintown Borough last week, and their vice president is a gun owner who said lost and stolen reporting does not affect his gun rights in any way, and he feels that being forced to rescind it, you know, endangers his town and the citizens he represents. So I think that Harrisburg should really take a look at if they're not going to do things, if they're not going to pass laws that help protect communities, maybe they need to give some of that power back to the local levels to do some of the things they think work, that their police tell them work, that their ADAs tell them work, and that their people want.
Shira Goodman, Jim McMillan, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Great. Thank you.